Well, good evening, everybody, or good morning in Singapore. So today we'll continue on as we usually do, a little bit of silent breathing meditation. We'll do the visualization with Shakyamuni Buddha and requesting inspiration for the study of the six far-reaching practices, which is the section that we're on now. And in the previous talks, we've done the initial scope, this initial level being, the middle level being, and then we've talked about the two ways of generating bodhicitta. And in the six perfections, we've discussed generosity, ethical conduct, and fortitude. So we'll be taking up joyous effort. So I hope you're enthusiastic today. Okay, so let's start with the little bit of breathing, and then we'll do the visualization. And then think of infinite compassion towards all sentient beings equally. Imagine what that might feel like. And imagine completely accurate wisdom, knowing the conventional and ultimate natures perfectly, and what that might feel like. And then imagine those two qualities appearing in the form of the Buddha in the space in front of you. So seeing the Buddha as the embodiment or as the representation of complete wisdom and compassion. And the Buddha looking at you with acceptance and delight and love. Yourself surrounded by all sentient beings. So nowhere to escape from sentient beings. They're all around us. And just like us, they're seeking to be happy and to avoid misery. And so we will all turn to the Buddha Dharma Sangha together in that quest, and imagine that we're leading everybody in taking refuge, generating bodhicitta, and so on. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time. I rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the Great Awakening. This ground anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, imagined as a Buddha land and offered to you. May all beings enjoy this pure land. Space of your truth body, from billowing clouds of your wisdom and love, let fall the rain of the profound and extensive Dharma in whatever form is suitable for subduing sentient beings. Guru Namandala Kamiryatayami. Glorious and precious Rip Guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness. Bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. The eyes through whom the last scriptures are seen, supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request. Taya ta mani mani maha mani asoha taya ta. Mahamaniya Soha.
Taya ta mani mani maha mani soha. Taya ta mani mani maha mani soha. Taya ta mani mani maha mani soha.
And remembering the Guru Buddha on the crown of your head, then make request for the sake of all Mother Sentient Beings, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, I'll practice joyous effort. So first, the armor-like joyous effort, so that even if attaining Buddhahood requires remaining in the unrelenting torment, hell realm, for 100,000 eons, for each Buddha quality to be produced, the signs and marks and so on. And two, to practice the joyous effort of creating virtue, and to accomplish each bodhisattva practice, generosity and so on, may I delight in it without losing my joyous effort. And may I also practice the joyous effort of benefiting sentient beings, bringing together all vast and profound virtues in myself and establishing others in the path of virtue. May I attain unsurpassed awakening. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so. In response to your requesting the Guru Buddha, five-colored light and nectar stream from all the parts of his body into you through the crown of your head. And similarly, on the crowns of the heads of all the sentient beings around you, there's also a Buddha, and the five-colored light and nectar streams from that Buddha into the sentient beings. So all this light and nectar absorbs into your body and mind and into those of all the sentient beings. May purify all your negativities and obscurations accumulated since beginningless time. And it especially purifies all illness, interferences, negativities, and obscurations that interfere with correctly training in the practice of the three kinds of joyous effort. Your body becomes translucent, the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit, and so forth, expand and increase. think in particular that a superior realization of correct training in the practice of the three kinds of joyous effort has arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. Okay, so joyous effort is sometimes translated as enthusiasm or enthusiastic perseverance. Doesn't matter the translation term, it's the same thing. So it's an attitude that takes joy in acting constructively. Okay, so the same way that kids are enthusiastic when they can go out and play, you know, and just want to go do it, then that's the way we feel about creating virtue. So it'd be quite nice, wouldn't it? Yeah? Do you feel joy and delight about the opportunity to create virtue?
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Yeah? Good. Good. Yeah, so that's what we want to really invigorate in ourselves, that mind that values that. So there's a clarity of motivation and a delight in virtue together with a very strong mind. Yeah, so you can see why this comes after fortitude. Yeah, because with fortitude we have to be able to bear difficulties and hardships. And then with a joyous effort, we can go forth and do lots of good things. If we don't have fortitude, then having joyous effort is going to be very difficult. So there's three kinds of joyous effort, at least how there's... Well, it's explained differently in different texts, but in the Lamrim, they talk about three kinds. So armor-like, yeah, joyous effort, the joyous effort of creating virtue, and the joyous effort of benefiting sentient beings. Okay, so armor-like joyous effort takes on a challenge with courage and interest, you know, with enthusiasm to work for the benefit of sentient beings. So this a bodhisattva with this kind of quality just has a very strong determination to remain in samsara to benefit sentient beings because they can't bear to see sentient beings suffer. Yeah. And when we say bodhisattvas can't bear to see sentient beings suffer, it's not because they've fallen to personal distress, but because their compassion is so strong they can't bear to see others suffer. Okay? So then when there's a challenge, when there's an opportunity to do something to benefit sentient beings, those bodhisattvas are there. Okay, so this kind of armor-like joyous effort is an antidote to discouragement. Yeah. Okay, and then I'll come back to that in a minute. And then the second one is the joyous effort of acting constructively. So here we do all virtuous actions and practice all of the six perfections with bodhicitta in order to attain awakening for all beings. And then the third kind of joyous effort is to work to benefit sentient beings. So you remember when we went over the bodhisattva precepts, the last group of them to benefit different specific types of sentient beings, and so really doing that. And then also it includes the four ways of assembling disciples. That's another way to benefit sentient beings, but we'll get to that. Okay, So the armor, like a joyous effort, yeah, counteracts, is specifically to counteract laziness, you know, because this art, you put on the armor and then you go off, kind of to, I'm going to fight with the afflictions and I'm going to do something to benefit sentient beings, okay? So it's with that kind of delight. And so the opposite or the impeding factor is, of course, laziness, which, and here the meaning of laziness is not taking delight in virtue. You know, it's a heavy mind that's like, do I have to? Really? I'd rather do something else. Okay, so there's three types of laziness that block our joyous effort. We've talked about this before, but we need to talk about it some more because we haven't overcome them yet. Okay, so the first one's procrastination. The second one is attachment to ordinary frivolous activities. And the third one is discouragement and self-degradation. Okay, so the first one, procrastination, laziness of procrastination. That's what we usually think of being lazy. Yeah, it's like, oh. I worked so hard cooking lunch today, I'm just exhausted. I had to type 5 emails and it just took everything out of me. I need to go to bed early, sleep late, have some days off, lie around. The schedule in this joint is too full. Too many activities, always busy. You people are fanatics. You know, all you do is talk about creating virtue, creating virtue. Well, I want to rest. Okay, so that's the laziness of procrastination. Yeah. We have lots of good reasons for it, right? No other monastery is like this. Remember when you were a little kid? The thing was, so-and-so's mother lets them do that, or so-and-so's father doesn't make them do that. Every other monastery gets... At Shasta Abbey, on the days that end in 5 and 0, they have an off day. How can't we do that? We only get a flex day once every other week. She said she didn't know that. Okay, so that kind of laziness of procrastination, you know, I'll get around to virtue on my own time, you know, when I feel like it, because, you know, after all, death is not going to come to me, and even if it does, it won't be for a really long time. So I have plenty of time. You know, I'll snooze, I'll rest, and then I'll set up my water bowls. Then I'll rest some more. Then I'll do a few prayers. Then I'll rest some more. Okay, so procrastination. Then the second kind of laziness. Yeah. So you can see with the laziness of procrastination, you know, that laziness doesn't think that we're going to die. Thinks we have plenty of time. Then the second laziness is attachment to frivolous activities. Okay, so this is the mind that likes hustle and bustle. The mind that likes having lots of things to do, you know, that loves having a full email box because it means you're important and people want you. That loves to have lots of invitations to go here and there and do this and that. The mind that loves to talk to people blah, 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 blah. Okay? It's the mind that just thinks about the happiness of this life, basically. Yeah, Geshe Nawandarge used to call it being the busiest of the busy. Yeah. Nowadays, we call it having a life. Yeah. When you go to work and people say, what did you do last weekend? If you can't list a few exciting activities, you know, then they say, why don't you go get a life? Yeah. Isn't that the expression? Go get a life. Yeah. Or you used your holiday to come and do retreat for 2 weeks, and your colleagues say, what did you do? I went to a meditation center. Go get a life. You know, you're just sitting there looking at your belly button all day and paying money to do it. Yeah? So, you know, people want to be the busiest of the busy doing the samsaric activities. So it means you have to see all the latest movies so you know what to talk about with people at work. You need to keep up on the latest TV programs and, you know, what everybody's watching and what the recent episode was, so you can talk about those with other people. You know, you need to keep up with whatever modern culture is saying you should do and have and be. Yeah, so you have to spend a lot of time going shopping to get all the proper accoutrements that you need to project the image that you want to project, yeah, to attract the people that you want to attract, so that you can be popular and well-liked and busy and win awards. Yeah, some people that here don't care so much about the being popular and busy, they want the awards, yeah. So it's the mind that, you know, you have to prove yourself and work and do this and that and the other thing so that you can bring home your trophies and plaques that all say that you must be a good person because you, you know, worked 18-hour days. Yeah, creating widgets, which the whole world now needs. Okay, so keeping yourself being very, very busy doing things that are meaningless and just basically blah, blah, spend our time, you know, hanging out, doing nothing much. Yeah, if you're in India, you're just in the chai shop all day. Yeah. Okay, then the third one is self-degradation and discouragement. So, you know, some of us, okay, we get up early. Yeah, I'm not, you know, online chatting with this person and that person all the time, and I don't care about so many awards because, you know, I just can't do anything right. And everybody else, this whole place, has the Buddha nature, but I somehow got born without it. And everybody else, you know, they had a good upbringing, and my family life was a mess. So it's just wounded me and damaged me forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So even my battery's running low, you know. Can't do anything right. Everybody else here is so smart. They go to Jeffrey's teaching, and they ask questions that I can't even understand. I don't even know the words that they're talking about. You know, not existing by their own characteristics as the referent of the term and concept. What are these people talking about? Not being the same substantial entity as the consciousness perceiving it. Why do these people speak English, you know? I just can't get it. And if you have to understand that to become enlightened, then, you know, it's beyond me. Yeah? And anyway, even if I could understand that, you have to have infinite compassion for all sentient beings. How can I have infinite compassion for sentient beings? They're such idiots. Yeah? I mean, you don't they know that you put the cup in the cupboard upside down? And they put the cup in the cupboard right side up. Yeah? They don't pick up my tray after breakfast. So I have dirty dishes in my foyer all morning. You know, I mean, I can't work for sentient beings. I just don't have it in me. Let the Buddha take care of it. Anyway, there's infinite Buddhas. There's infinite Bodhisattvas. They can take care of these sentient beings. I just, you know, I mean, everybody else got the Buddha nature. And God overlooked me. So I'm incapable. Then anyway, when you practice the path, you know, have you studied what you have to do to be a bodhisattva, practice the bodhisattva path? You have to make charity of your body. You know, the only thing I'm willing to cut off is my fingernails and my hair. But they're talking about, you know, you give your arm. You know, Aryadeva, he popped his eyeball out and gave it to some beggar who asked him for his eyeball. These bodhisattvas, I don't get it. You know, and then the beggar took the eyeball and threw it away. I'm supposed to do that to become a Buddha? You know, I don't even want to give a kidney to my brother or sister. Pop my eyeballs out. That path is too hard. Yeah? And then you have to promise to stay in samsara until it ends. Yeah? I mean, I want to get out of samsara as quickly as my little 2 feet can carry me. I don't want to stay in samsara for the benefit of these dear sentient beings. Has low energy, just like me. Okay. Yeah, so I'm incapable. Path is too hard. Goal is too high. Too high. Yeah? 3 countless great eons? Yeah? I'm supposed to spend creating virtue 3 countless great eons. Can you make it 2 countless great eons? Actually, that's still too long. How about next week? You know, I'd like to, you know, get enlightened next week. I hear tantras very fast. Can I sign up for that? Please? Yeah. Because otherwise, the goal is just too high. I mean, stay in samsara all the sentient beings are enlightened. Go to the hell realms. Hey, what's Sopa Rinpoche talking about? Going to the hell realms for the sake of one stupid sentient being. I don't want to even go to the hell realms for my own sake because of my own negative karma. Why should I go for some jerk who criticizes me and doesn't say thank you when I do something nice, like wash his dish and throw his napkin away? You know? I mean, they send him beings too much. Yeah, go to the hell realms? Yeah, you want to go to the hell realms for one sentient being? If I'm in the hell realms, are you going to go there and rescue me? Huh? Are you going to go there and rescue me? I don't think so. You're just going to sit on your tush here. Because it's just too hard. So, yeah. Let's go watch a movie, yeah? Okay, so, laziness. Yeah, do you have some idea of what laziness is?
Yeah. We practice it every day.
Yeah, we practice it every day, don't we? Yeah.
It comes naturally.
Yeah, it does come very naturally, yeah. And we're definitely copycats. The cats curl up and sleep most of the day. We want to do the same. Yeah. Eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom. You're just like Shantideva. But you're missing something. Yeah? And I'm missing that same thing because I just eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom too. Where are you? Okay, so there's four powers to counteract laziness. Okay, the first one is having appreciation, interest, and aspiration to cultivate joyous effort and abandon laziness. Okay, so to have this kind of... See, we're not lazy when it comes to growling at what we don't like. But we're very lazy when it comes to praising somebody. Okay, so we want appreciation, interest, aspiration to cultivate joyous effort, and abandon laziness. So to do that, we have to think of the benefits of joyous effort and the faults of laziness. Okay, what are some of the benefits of joyous effort and the faults of laziness? What's some benefits of joyous effort?
Mind is happy.
Okay, mind is happy.
You
create lots of merit.
People will enjoy being around you.
People will enjoy being around you.
And no task would be too difficult or too boring or too anything.
Yeah, so nothing's going to be too difficult, too boring.
And you'll have lots of energy.
And you have lots of energy, at least mental energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are some of the drawbacks of laziness?
Get nothing done.
You don't get anything done. Here it's particularly creating virtue. We don't get, well, and we don't get any purification done either.
Yeah. We don't create merit.
Yeah, don't create merit.
Die having wasted your life.
Yeah. We die having wasted our life.
A lot of regret.
And thus have a lot of regret when we die.
And even if you're not dying, you still have a lot of regret.
Yeah. Well, we're always dying.
In condition.
Aren't we?
Yes.
Aren't we always dying? So, yeah, so we regret non-virtues that we've done.
And then you make quite a negative karma through all the degradation. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and through the self-degradation, there's just a lot of negative karma. Yeah, putting ourselves down. And, you know, when we look at ourselves like that, then we look at everybody else like that, too.
You're setting up habitual patterns so you can expect the next life to be the same.
Yep, setting up lots of habitual patterns. Yeah, and then the next life, same old, same old. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's quite important, you know, to really think about these. What are the faults of lacking the joyous effort and just going along with our laziness? And what are the benefits of cultivating joyous effort? Yeah, and if you really see that, the people who are so incredibly into the Dharma. I mean, they're just like going all the time. I mean, you look at His Holiness and he's happy all the time. You look at some of, I mean, a lot of my teachers were quite elderly when I met them. Even they're, you know, in their 80s, full of energy, mind very bright. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so that appreciation, interest, aspiration is the first quality that helps you counteract laziness. Okay? The second one is stability. Yeah. And what that is when you started a virtuous activity, finish it. Okay? Don't stop in the middle. Don't start and stop, you know, if you can avoid it. Don't, like, start one thing, stop it. Start another thing, stop it. Start a third thing, stop it. Okay? Because then you don't feel anything. And, pardon? Yeah, you don't finish anything. So, okay. So it's like, you know, maybe you start prostrations, and then, you know, you forget about those, and then you do guru yoga for a while, and then you get bored with that, and you stop that, and then you do vajrasattva for a little bit, and stop that. And meantime, nothing, you know, none of the nandra practices gets done. Or you're working on, you know, you're studying a text. So you study this text for 2 weeks. Then it's like, okay, you know, you're only partway through, but you want something new and exciting. So then you start another text. You do that one for another short time. Don't get very far in the text. Go on to a third text. So you learn a little bit from all sorts of different texts. And you get yourself totally confused because you haven't studied something from beginning to end. Yeah? And so you're mixing up a little bit of this and a little bit of that from all kinds of texts talking about all different sorts of things. And you never finish one thing to get the whole big picture. Okay? So stability in what you're doing. Start it and finish it. Yeah. If you start something and as you're doing it, you see actually, you know, this is not so worthwhile, then stop it. Okay? But what we're talking about here is the fickle mind, the restless mind that doesn't like to stay with anything. Okay? The mind that's always saying, you know, well, I'll stay at the Abbey for a little bit, and then I'll go here, and then I'll go there, and then I'll go to the third place and the fourth place. Yeah, kind of always looking for, you know, the grass is greener on the, no, the chanting is better on the other side of the meditation hall. Okay, yeah, so always looking for something else, never finishing anything, never carrying it out. Okay? And the problem with this is that, you know, it adversely affects us, but it also makes problems in our relationships with other people, because when we say we're going to do something, we may be very enthusiastic about it at the beginning. We say we're going to do something. The people we're working with are expecting us to do it because we said we would. And then when time comes for the finished product, we haven't done anything, and everybody else is left holding the bag, you know. And, yeah, and then we make some kind of lame excuse like, well, when I said I'd do it, I didn't mean I'd do all of it. I just meant that I would do, Or, oh, I didn't realize the date was this and that. I thought the date was, Or I thought I was going to have some help. I didn't realize I was going to have to do it alone. Or, you know, so we have our excuse factory gets involved there. Okay? And so what it does is it also interrupts a lot of our relationships with people, because then people don't trust us. Yeah? When, you know, if we said we're going to do something and then we don't do it, then next time we say we're going to do something, people are going to go, well, we'll believe it when we see it. Okay? So if we're in that kind of situation, because it happens actually quite often, people are enthusiastic about something at the beginning, and they don't stop and really check well their own abilities and the time commitment and all these different things first, but they just said, wow, this sounds so great, I want to do it, and they volunteer, and then later they stop and assess it and realize that they bit off more than they can chew. And they don't want to, you know, if you realized you did that, tell the other people who are depending on you, so that they can make other arrangements. But so often people feel kind of ashamed, so they don't say anything and hoping the other people will forget it. But they haven't. They're depending on you to do something. And then it's really embarrassing at the end. Okay? So either complete it or go early on to the people and say, you know, I'm really sorry I bit off more than I can chew, and I will help you find somebody else who can take this project on and carry it. Yeah? Instead of, well, I can't do it, bye. Yeah? And then, yeah. Okay? So it's not good for others, not good for ourselves. Let's try and be stable. Third one is joy. To have a joyous mind and to be consistent and continuous. Okay? So it's interesting that joy, you know, here is meaning consistency and, you know, doing something continuously. Kind of like the stability one. Okay? Yeah, but taking, you have joy and that joy carries you. So it's not a selfish joy of, you know, oh, this is so exciting. I feel, you know, this giddy happiness we get sometimes. It's not that, but it's an internal joy that carries our energy for a long time and enables us to really put some good energy into something and be consistent and carry it through. So it's like having a regular daily meditation practice. You know, that's so important. You know, for our own progress, and not to expect to have wondrous, fantastic things happening every day in our practice. But the idea is just do your practice, and by doing it, then you gradually change. Yeah. And through that gradual change, something really good comes. And then the fourth factor that helps us overcome laziness is rest and relaxation. Okay, so what this means, it doesn't mean procrastination and sleeping and lying around. It means that when you have finished a project, rest, rejoice, take a break. Yeah, if you're really exhausted, rest a little bit. In other words, don't push yourself and make your mind so tight that, you know, suddenly your mind just goes, I'm fed up, I can't do it anymore. Okay? And similarly, learn to listen to your body so that when your body needs rest, you know to take rest. And in that way, you know, when you can learn how to listen to your body and mind and kind of be a doctor to yourself, then you actually wind up being more consistent in your practice. Yeah? Because the people who put in lots of effort, you know, really strong effort, and then they burn out and they fizzle, yeah, then they don't really get anywhere. So, you know, this one about rest and relaxation is learning how to pace ourselves. Okay? Knowing what our own capabilities are, not underestimating them with self-degradation, and not pushing ourselves and competing with other people, trying to be the most virtuous one. You know, I've done more mantra, I've finished mantra sattva before all the rest of you did. You know, but then at the end you're like wiped out, you can't do anything for another three months. Okay? So, you know, if you get exhausted, then there's no joy in doing virtue. Okay? So, but if you delight in helping others, but you're tired, then your joy is still there. Okay? So it doesn't mean every time you're tired, take a break, because then we never get anything done. Okay? Because we can have joy and be tired at the same time. And if we have joy, even though our body may be tired, we can, you know, keep going for a while. But, you know, when we find that our joy is going down because we're so exhausted, then, you know, you want to prevent that. Okay, are you getting what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it really involves learning to listen to yourself and creating a sense of balance. And we're often not so good about that because we hear this about rest and relaxation and then tomorrow you're all down. You know, it's like, I'm exhausted. You know, I worked in the forest today. I'm exhausted. She talked about rest and relaxation. I better rest and relax today. Don't want to lose my joy. Okay? So, you know, we go to that extreme, or we go to the extreme of, you know, God, I've got to keep myself busy. I've got to, you know, create so much merit because I'm going to die real soon. And, you know, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, and I've got to do this. And, you know, like in the skit with all your mantra, you know, things, counting all your mantras and, you know, bowing and counting mantras and doing everything all at once because you've got to get it all done because you don't want to be lazy. Yeah? Okay? So, it yeah? It's learning how to pace ourselves, okay? And really getting rid of the competitive mind as well as the pushing mind. Okay? So they say rest before you get completely exhausted. But don't rest when you don't really need to. Okay? Then there's three kinds of confidence that we want to have also, okay, want to build up three kinds of confidence. The first one is in our actions, so we're prepared to do anything alone without the help of others, if we can do it, yeah. But this is, you know, when Zopa Rinpoche says, you know, I'm going to liberate all sentient beings by myself alone, you know, this is what he is trying to get within us. You know, get us to think of, you know, I'm going to work for sentient beings. It doesn't matter if everybody is standing by my side and coaching me on and doing it with me. I have the confidence to just go and do it my own, you know, go and do it. Yeah? Okay? And then confidence in having the capacity to do something. And so here you think that other sentient beings are under the influence of their disturbing emotions. They can't work for their own benefit. You know, they're self-sabotaging all the time. And we've seen the harm of the disturbing emotions. And we have a very, you know, we have a very strong determination not to let ourselves be influenced by them. So because of that, I'm capable of working for sentient beings. Okay. In other words, you know, I have great fortune in my life having this precious human life. I've seen the disadvantages of the afflictions. Other sentient beings can't see their disadvantages. So, you know, I've had the opportunity to learn the antidotes and to practice the Dharma. So I'm going to benefit sentient beings in whatever big or small way I can. In other words, having the confidence that we can do that, even though we're not Chenrezig yet. You know, it's some confidence that, you know, according to our own ability, we're going to do that. And then the third kind of confidence is the confidence to catch the afflictions as they're arising and counteract them. And so to not let ourselves be under their sway. Okay, so the three kinds of confidence in our actions, in having us having the capacity to do something, and in working against the afflictions. Okay, then the second kind of joyous effort is to create virtuous actions. So this is, you know, whatever virtuous action there is to do without procrastination, yeah, being busy doing samsaric activities and low self-esteem, okay? So So just engaging in virtuous action with this kind of confidence, you know, I can do it, I have the capacity, I can fight the afflictions, I can, you know, do something to benefit sentient beings. Yeah. And it's really very important to have that kind of confidence. Yeah, His Holiness always talks about how to be a bodhisattva, you have to have very strong self-confidence. Yeah, you have to really think, you know, I can do this. Yeah, and I'm going to try and do this, and I'm going to put my all into it. Instead of like, you know, gee, I don't know if I even want to stick my little toe in. I might get hurt. I might look stupid. I might fall down. I might, you know, the whole mind, our whole mind of anxiety that's so afraid what other people are going to think of us and so afraid of failure. Yeah. I was once talking with somebody and he was telling me how he talked to a professor who maybe physics or some kind of department like that, who was also in charge of awarding grants and postdocs and everything. And my friend asked this professor, you know, what criteria do you look at when you see, you know, who to award something to? And the professor said, I look at how the students respond when they fail. He didn't say, I look at, you know, who's the brightest and, you know, who does things the quickest, but how they respond when they fail. Yeah, because if you're going to work in this field, you're going to fail, you know. Similarly with practicing the Dharma, there's going to be times when we aspire to do things and we bit off more than we can chew, or we can't finish it, or we have an outbreak of afflictions deluxe, you know. So, but to be able to handle those situations with still having joyous effort and not giving up on ourselves and not giving up on the Dharma and not giving up on sentient beings, yeah, but still having that inside enthusiasm and joy to continue on the path, even when we fall down and go boom. Okay? And I think that's something very, very important, you know? And to do that, we have to really stop comparing ourselves to others, stop the jealousy, stop the arrogance, and just get on with doing what's important. And not saying, oh, so-and-so has so much more joyous effort than me. Yeah? No, we're all different people. We all have different limitations. We all have different talents and abilities. So the path is going to look somewhat different for each of us. Yeah? What's easy for somebody else is going to be hard for us. What's easy for us is going to be hard for somebody else. So all this thing of, you know, how do I look, you know, compared to other people? What are they going to think of me? Is a huge, big, fat waste of time. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Then there's, yeah. Okay, so just some things from Chandrakirti's text, Majjhimika Avatara. So, you know, the joyous effort to protect ourselves from afflictions, to apply ourselves to the Dharma continuously without interruption, but in a balanced way, to not put ourselves down, but to think, I can practice. Yeah. I do this in slow, you know, small chunks, I can manage this, okay? Also, continually progressing, not giving up or losing our energy partway. And then also not being complacent, not saying, oh, I did this, that's enough. Yeah, but, you know, resting when we need to rest, but then come back and continually try and build on our joyous energy, joyous effort, so that we improve. Okay, so they say it's good to be satisfied with our wealth, our friends, and our living conditions. But when it comes to doing virtuous actions, we shouldn't be satisfied and complacent. We should think, you know, oh, this is fun. I want to do more. Okay. Not, oh God, I better do more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, oh, this is good. This is meaningful. I want to do more. Okay. So, any questions on this one so far?
Yeah, I was just wondering what you were saying about, you know, the laziness and one of the aspects of it, and not doing, you know, frivolous activities and stuff, and how other people have expectations of what's fun for you, which you might consider frivolous. Uh-huh. I was talking to a friend of mine in Germany, and I had friends and family in Germany the other day, and I said I was going to the Abbey, and I could hear his voice drop. And, you know, and I get this quite a lot, actually, from, you know, people who aren't Dharma friends, and they say, but Margie, you need to have more fun in your life. This is what people usually say to me, and I say, look, you have no idea how much we laugh at the Abbey. It's the best fun I've ever had. And they think I'm lying. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just—I try to explain, you know, and it's so it's very interesting other people's perceptions of what's fun and what you should be doing. And you're thinking, well, I'm already doing this as well as practicing the Dharma.
Yeah.
It's kind of
yeah.
It's very interesting.
Very good. That's nice.
Yeah. You're referencing the Gita light thing. You know, I've also heard it kind of said reverse, where, you know, if you're not busy enough, or if somebody's not, you know, the person, well, of course I'm busy, I've got a life. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if somebody asks, you know, let's have a meal together. If you can have a meal together in the next few days, somehow you don't have a life. Because
yeah.
You have to be booked up for 3 weeks in advance, you know. To show people that you are active and having fun and important and popular. And, you know, people really, they don't know how to sit and be alone with themselves anymore and really feel rather frightened by that prospect. And yet, you know, when you learn the Dharma, you become, you know, quite happy to be alone and enjoy things. Hmm?
Mm-hmm. This is something that in my safe group this week, many explore who have no Dharma group and have not practiced or studied the Dharma before. Now they realize, oh, there's something else. I don't have to get a dog or, kids are out. Many people.
Okay. So you're saying some of the safe participants are becoming, that the safe course gives them something really meaningful to do. Rather than, you know, growing bonsai trees or going bowling or. Yeah. Uh-huh.
See, that's what Tracy sure talked about. She replaced a lot of things she was doing in her life with doing offering service activities for us.
Mm-hmm.
She found that her whole world kind of turned around much happier. And,
yeah, yeah. So we have some volunteers that really that live far away, and they spend a lot of time offering service for the Abbey. Yeah, with the website or designing things. I mean, we have lots of people living far away who offer service, who really take delight in doing that, and have that kind of joy in creating service, and really feel like they're part of the community because of that. Yeah, it's very sweet, actually. People will think of us out of the blue, and you know, I mean, somebody crocheted a bookmark and sent it to me, and I was thinking, wow, you know, who would ever think to crochet a bookmark and, you know, and send it to the Abbey? But, you know, somebody has that kind of thought. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions about this? Huh?
It's a work in progress.
Yes, it's a work in progress.
Shanti Davis said, there's no time to sleep, you fool.
Exactly, yeah. There's no time to waste, actually.
One thing I found troubling when I was working was that, I was entering the job market at a time where it was seen as like, if you stayed in the job for too long, you were stagnating. People were always trying to move every 2 years. Or this job is structured that way, but you know, then you never get to see through the long-term effect of what you do. Like you start something and then they move you somewhere else. I just thought that was not the, you know, it's not a great way to build a workforce, but it seemed to be the way it was going.
Okay. In your working world, yeah, work and do something and then switch to something else that's going to be bigger and better. Yeah.
With technology moving so fast, you're finding that happening just because
it's
a field, and then 5 years later, well, technology just made that field obsolete.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Yeah. Big, nowadays, this thing of job continuity is... It's very endangered because of the changes that are coming about. Should we go on? Or do you have anything else about this? Is anybody watching online? I don't hear anything from them.
No questions. There was just one comment about how one advantage of not being busy I found is that you have the ability to respond when people do need you.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, because some people keep themselves so busy that when somebody needs help, they have no energy or time left to give to anyone. Okay, so now we will go on to the fifth perfection, or the fifth far-reaching practice, meditative stability.
Benefiting others?
Okay. So the one about benefiting others, the joyous effort of benefiting others, so that's, you know, engaging in actions that are of benefit to others. So if you look at those last several bodhisattva vows, so, you know, when we can, helping the, for example, the sick, helping the poor, helping, consoling those who are grieving.
Travelers,
you know, people who are lost, people who are in danger, people who are lonely, people who are on the verge of creating negative karma and they need some guidance about how to avoid creating, you know, avoid doing damaging actions. You know, encouraging other living beings, teaching them, you know, if they need to learn a certain skill or something, teaching them and helping them learn how to do something. Okay, so all the different ways that there are to help different sentient beings. So to take joy in doing that, okay? Instead of, another sentient being. Ask me for something, you know, just to have a joyful mind in reaching out and connecting to people.
Seems like benefiting others makes us feel connected in a way that produces joy within us.
Yeah, very much. So that when we're able, I mean, the whole thing of benefiting others and connecting with others, they very much go hand in hand. When we benefit them, we feel connected. That makes us feel joyful. When we feel joyful, we want to benefit them, so we connect. When we connect with others, we want to benefit them. We feel joyful. So those things, three things kind of build on each other back and forth. Yeah.
What I find it challenging here is when you can't find something to benefit someone else, not to let your mind get discouraged.
Yeah.
So stay the mental aspect of it.
Okay, so when you can't find the solution to somebody else's problem and you can't benefit them. I think we have to see again that the thing of benefiting others doesn't always mean we solve their problems for them. You know, because sometimes what people really need is emotional support or understanding. Yeah. So we don't have to be Mr. or Ms. Fix It. Yeah, but give the support people need. And then also sometimes to realize that people, they're stuck. And whatever we're doing is, you know, it's not having any effect. Because it's always so much easier to see what somebody else needs to do in their lives and how they need to change, than to see what we need to do and what we need to change. And then, you know, being able to have equanimity at that point and say, you know, I'm still here if and when the circumstances change and the person's more receptive. Okay? So you know how when we had the retreat on love and I was talking about how the Theravada do the four immeasurables. Yeah, so your overarching way of relating to others is with loving kindness. When they have problems, then you generate compassion towards them. When they have good things happen to them, then you have sympathetic joy and rejoice together with them. And then when they're doing well and they don't need you, or when they're stuck and they are unreceptive, then you have to have equanimity and just keep yourself steady, keep the door open. Yeah? And I think, you know, that being able to have that and not get discouraged is very important if we're really going to maintain bodhicitta. Because if our bodhicitta depends on other beings being successful in doing what we want them to do, we're setting ourselves up for a lot of heartache. Yeah. So I think, you know, when I look around and I look at my teachers, you know, so often they give wondrous advice, good instructions, and then people do the very opposite. Yeah? And sometimes it's me doing that. Yeah, I've heard the teachings, I know what to do, I do the opposite. Or I see other people, you know, they heard the teachings, went in one ear and out the other. Yeah? And how our teachers remained so their happiness doesn't depend on our actions. Because if it did, they would feel let down most of the time. Yeah? But their happiness depends on just the act of helping, just the act of doing. You know, of course, if it bears a good result, they're even happier. That's why when we visualize the Buddha at the beginning of our practice, we think of the Buddha looking at us with delight because we're actually doing something virtuous now instead of not virtuous. Yeah, so we think the Buddha's looking at us with happiness. But when you think about it, yeah, lots of times the Buddha just needs incredible internal strength and fortitude and equanimity. Because we're like off the wall, aren't we? Okay, so really, if you're going to practice bodhisattva path, you have to have a lot of endurance. Yeah? And a way of making your own mind happy, making your own mind satisfied, so that your internal happiness doesn't depend on what other people say and do. Yeah, but your internal happiness depends on the virtue you're creating and your own sense of satisfaction and inner peace. So that the delight is in the giving. The delight is in the doing. The delight is not in getting a thank you or some acknowledgement or people feeling grateful or who knows what.
So this third joyous effort seems very similar to one of the kinds of generosity.
Yeah. And actually the same list, it came when we talked about ethical conduct, the ethical conduct of benefiting others, and it's going to come again in the in wisdom. Yeah, it's one of the types of wisdom, the wisdom of benefiting others. So, yeah, we look at this from many, many different aspects, angles.
It seems like it's quite important to really train yourself to acknowledge the virtue you create.
Yeah.
That if you don't do that, then your mind will go down quite easily.
Yep. That's why the practice of rejoicing at our own and others' merit is so important. Because when we do that, it buoys our mind and keeps our mind happy. When we can't acknowledge our own virtue or can't see it, then it's so easy to get down on ourselves and then get down on others because we can't see their virtue either. Then it just looks like everything's falling apart, the whole world's falling apart. Yeah, so it's quite important, really, to see and rejoice at our own and others' virtue, even if it's just a little bit of virtue.
I don't mean to hopefully not steer off topic here, but would that kind of be in the same lines as somebody that has trouble like accepting a compliment?
So you're talking about that same when we have trouble accepting a compliment?
You see your own virtue or celebrate your own virtue.
Right.
Would that kind of be parallel to, you know, if somebody says, wow, you can really articulate this well, and I'm
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, not able to accept positive feedback from others. And I've led discussion groups with people on that topic and like, what is it that blocks us? And it's quite interesting what people come up with. Sometimes people feel like, well, I'm not worthy. So if somebody, compliments me or gives me some good feedback, I'm not worthy, as if... how can I possibly be worthy of somebody saying something nice about me? You know, somebody criticizing me, yes, I'm worthy of that, but them saying something nice, I'm not worthy. So that's really skewed, isn't it? That's very skewed, if that's all we can think. So you can see, you know, how our ignorant mind works. Sometimes people don't want to accept positive feedback because they feel... They think that they're going to feel obliged then to do something nice for the other person afterwards. Yeah, so they don't want to feel obliged. What else stops you?
Sometimes it can, I think, kind of a fear that could be seen as arrogant.
That you've what?
A fear of being seen as arrogant.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like that you've praised.
Yeah, so I can't accept this because then I can't accept the good feedback because then people will think I'm arrogant.
It's a false sense of humility.
Yeah, it's a false sense of humility. Right. It's attachment to reputation.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Self-denigration.
Self-denigration. Yeah.
It's so interesting because people are giving us what we want.
Yes.
But we can't accept it when it comes honestly.
Yes. We want good feedback. We want praise and recognition. And when it comes, oh, no. You know, that's not me. Don't expect that of me. Don't think I can do that. you know, oh, don't think I'm arrogant. You know, we're like this, you know. And actually, you know, the proper way to look at it is when somebody is complimenting us or giving us some good feedback, it means they have a virtuous mind. Yeah, they have a mind that can see goodness in somebody else. We should rejoice at that. Yeah? Rejoice that they have that virtuous mind. If we start on, oh no, I don't deserve it, no, 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 then the other person feels like, you know, they're giving us a gift and we're refusing it. Yeah? And it's not a nice person. Have you ever done that? Like, tried to compliment somebody and they just say, no, 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 and then that makes you say it even more, and it makes them say no, 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 even more, and then it's just, the whole thing's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's like you have to convince them.
Yeah, right, and they refuse. Well, that's the thing, you wonder if they like it and they want to hear it again, or you wonder if it's, they really don't, they're going to, you know, it's like, oh, if you think I did something right this time, then you're going to have too high expectations for me next time. So, you know, don't see me like that because I'm not that great. Don't, you know, expect that from me. People, huh?
Oh, it's probably a combination of those.
Yeah, it could be, you know, many different things kind of all together. But it's so strange because it's like they're giving us what we want. And then we can't accept it. Hmm?
Can it be also that the person is so disconnected from herself or himself that they can't see it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We feel, I don't deserve that. I didn't do that. Yeah. What do you... And then we make the other people
feel badly.
Like, you know, kind of what... Yeah. What kind of idiot are you praising me? You know, I don't have that kind of good quality, so you must be very stupid thinking I do. Yeah.
But the way they teach giving good feedback through nonviolent communication, I think, sidesteps that. When you give feedback acknowledging someone's virtue, for example, and then saying how this makes me happy.
Yes.
Or how this fulfills a need for me, then all those questions are kind of no longer present.
Yeah.
Because you've explained what it is that you appreciate.
Yeah. So if you give good feedback in the NVC way, then you say what you like what the other person did, and you say what need it fulfilled in you. And then it's hard for them to say, oh, well, I don't want you to have that need fulfilled. Yeah. So, yeah. But often we don't do that, you know, because we feel that if we relate it to ourselves, then sometimes, you know, it must be selfish or this, that, or the other thing. But it actually does pave the way for somebody to be able to hear it and accept it. And it's a gift, you know. I mean, if somebody gives good feedback, they're the ones creating the virtue, so let's not interfere with it. It's the good feedback is not about us, it's about their having a virtuous mind. Yeah, so we don't all of a sudden need to get so self-conscious and say, no, 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 that's really not me. Because it's not about us, it's about them having a virtuous mind that can see good in others. And I just remember, you know, my own way of wondering what to do about that, you know, when people compliment you or whatever. And I asked one of my friends once, and he said, you just say thank you. Yeah? And that's so hard to say when somebody, you know, says something nice, like, thank you? If I say thank you, that means that I must have that quality, and then you're going to expect me to have it next time, and blah, blah, blah. But to really see, it's not about me. It's about them having a good state of mind. So you say thank you and as a way of rejoicing for them.
Mm-hmm. But then, too, when you do that, it since it then brings connection between the two,
right,
then you do grow, you do gain confidence, you, mm-hmm. you start believing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It enables you to accept the, mm-hmm. the compliment. Okay. Have enough to practice?
Oh my gosh. A couple of lifetimes, yeah.
Well, I do hope you practice it so that when I say, where were we, you remember. Okay.
May the spiritual teacher soon lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniryataya.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds
of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Ashravasti Abbey in the west floor.